Epilogue. When the glass broke and the moat shattered, the world did not at first shift on its axis. In fact, there was a moment, longer than I cared for, when I began to think that the thing had not had any effect at all. I imagined how we must look, my sister and I. There must be something almost farcical about it, these two similar-looking women wrestling each other for control of an eye-sized purple marble, one of them squeezing the other's left hand as if she meant to break every bone in her sibling's fingers. And then a sort of hiatus, after the moat had been destroyed, but before its effects became manifest. The world continuing, the seagulls redoubling their squabbling, the fishermen and pleasure boats tilting on the gentle swell beyond Belém and the monument to the discoveries. And then my sister, Chikuyelo, became limp. She slammed to the ground, her exo suddenly giving up its duty of support. The rigor had also gone from her limbs. They were no longer stiff or quivering, for Arachne had absented herself. Bruised and breathless, I knelt next to my sister. "Something happened," I said, by which I meant that Mekufi's gift had evidently had some effect, enough to knock Arachne out of direct control at the very least. At first, my sister could not say anything. "Yes," she said, after a worrying interval. "Yes." "The mechanism?" My sister swallowed and took a series of ragged breaths. Several times she looked on the verge of saying something. I supported her head and stroked the side of her face, this version of myself, who now appeared to be both older and more childlike than only a few moments earlier. I felt an oceanic wave of love and despair crash over me. She had turned herself from her two other siblings, and that had hurt us. When Mekufi told her that I would probably die in the process of surrendering my quorum-binding implant, she had deemed that a price worth paying. As unquestionably callous as that act had been, though, I had never blamed her for it. Mekufi would never have had the nerve to attempt bringing me back to life if she had not compelled him to act. I would still be in their seastead, still frozen, a puzzle that no one was in any rush to solve. So Chikuyelo had given me life as well as death. Her reasons, too, had not been entirely selfish. Under similar circumstances, I would probably have come to the same conclusion. Afterwards, she had taken me in and made me whole again. I had never thought of any of us as having patience, but Chikuyelo's had turned out to be inexhaustible. I suppose for her, it was like raising a second child. She had helped me speak, helped me rebuild my sense of who I was. She had redeemed herself 100 times over. "It's gone," she said finally. "The org. It's not there anymore." We were speaking Portuguese, with nothing between us but air and muscle and the slow machinery of our own brains. It was easy for me, but much harder for my sister. "Are you all right?" I asked.
"No, I don't think I am."
But my sister still found the strength to smile.
"She did something. Just before the end. She was in my head. Too far inside."
I confess that I had no idea what to do. It may seem strange, but we had not really given much thought to what would happen after we ended the mechanism. When people were hurt or injured, the surveilled world knew what needed to be done. If the people could not summon help themselves, it sent help. A doctor would come, or a scrambulance. If my sister could not issue her own call for assistance, then someone else would invoke the necessary org functions. The mech would provide. But the mech was not providing.
There were no doctors or scrambulances coming. No one knew that my sister was hurt except me. And I was powerless. I tore myself from my sister's side. I had to know. There had been people down below, with their long shadows like sundials. I moved to the other wall and surveyed the stone and marble compass of the windrows. It was not so very long since we had last looked at it. There were still people down there, and their shadows had not varied to any obvious degree. But the people were agitated. They were talking to each other, or trying to talk. Someone was running now. They were shouting. Whatever they were saying made no sense to me. But there was nothing strange about that. I really only spoke one language these days. I dashed back to my sister. They cannot understand each other. The org is gone. They are all like me now. I looked back over her shoulder at the stairwell leading down into the lower levels of the monument. I have to find someone who can help.
No, my sister said. You don't.
She closed her eyes. They were closed for a very long time. I supported her head again. I wondered if there was a chance of getting my sister down to the level of the windrows without the exo to help either of us. I thought it unlikely, and also did not think much of my chances of finding help when I got there. I could still hear the voices. They were speaking in many tongues. They sounded frightened. They made me think of children who had been playing a happy and carefree game, only to have the rules changed at a stroke, and now the game had become both dangerous and bewildering. This was unfortunate, but it occurred to me that the people did not know how lucky they were. I am sorry, I said, when my sister reopened her eyes. For what? There is nothing I can do.
There is,
my sister said, with some tremendous penultimate effort. She moved her hand, closed it around one of mine, and drew it to her neck.
There is.
What?
Be strong, she said. You have work to do. They are going to need you now.
My sister died then. I felt her hand slacken, so the focus and brightness slip from her eyes. But my hand was still where she had brought it. And I understood now that she had wanted me to have the charm she wore around her neck. It was that old thing we had found in the box when we drew lots under the candelabra tree and agreed between us that it should remain on Earth in the care of Chikuyelo. I undid the leather fastening as carefully as I could, then lifted the charm free. My fingers felt clumsy as I re-tied it around my own neck. I wanted this to be done now, before I thought of anything else. I did not feel strong or resolute, but I forced myself to stand again, and stand tall. I thought of my sister's final words. I did not feel like I had the means in me to help myself, let alone anyone else, but Chikuyelo had spoken truthfully. They would need me now, simply because I had already learned to live without the mechanism. But I could still hear the shouts and cries. They sounded worse than before. I moved to the edge and looked out across the water and the city again. Beyond the confusion at the monument to the discoveries, it was hard to sense any desperate change in things.
The buildings gleamed, and the suspension bridge glittered. But it would be like this everywhere, I knew. Not just Lisbon, but the whole world. And not just Earth, either. The mechanism's collapse would be spreading out through the solar system, even as I thought these words. It was far beyond the moon already, well, on its way to Mars and beyond. It was preposterous to think that one woman could do any good when so much was broken. An unforgivable vanity, if truth be told. No one should have the arrogance to imagine such a thing. But then again, there is that name of ours. Chiku read. Chiku Akinya. Great-granddaughter of Eunice Akinya. Sengi Dongma. The lion-faced one. Mother of us all. I steeled myself. It was good to have a purpose in life. You have been listening to On the Steel Breeze by Alistair Reynolds, read by Ajwa Ando. It is an Orion Audiobooks production, copyright Orion Publishing. The executive producer was Pandora White. Music, recording and production by Peter Rinney.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.